Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm grateful you chose to be with me here on this March 1st program, 2020. It's already in March. Wow. As time does fly, as our lives do progress or not, we're going to be looking at a very interesting subject, what it takes to be my student. I get these questions from all sorts of people. I think some of them are very much millennials, and we'll see exactly how this all might pan out today. I want to thank you not only for listening, but for your questions. Many of you send them in via email, greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire.org. I'm very grateful for your questions. Any question you like, any question that seems important to you will obviously be very important to me, and I hope that you will write me as soon as you possibly can, as it may be something's on your pea picker. I got three here that are really chomping at the bit, so we'll get into that in a minute. I want to thank my sponsors for this radio program, for my TV offerings, for everything that I do, everything that you see on the Aspire website at aspire.org is there because of the kindness of people who have made donations to help you. Yes, believe it or not, these are for you. You are listening to this radio program by the loving graces of my sponsors who make all this possible. And if you find the radio program or the TV programs meaningful, I hope you will become a sponsor. Help us support everything we do. Of course, you know, costs money, whether you like it or not. And your donation will also help me go to hospice that I do each and every week. So there's a lot involved in your loving kindness, and I hope that you will see the value of it and join us. Come to the website at aspire.org if you're interested. There you will see that four-letter word support. Just click on it. A drop-down menu will ensue, and it will say why support Aspire, and you can go from there and hopefully help us. What does it mean to be a student? What does it mean to be a teacher? These are very important questions. And most people, when they're trying to learn something, want, you know, a teacher that will help them learn. My work is totally different than any other work that a person might get involved in, spiritual work. I'm trying to help you unlearn, not learn. And this stuff that I teach, as people call it, is not something that you can learn. You can't memorize it and think that because you have memorized it that you know or that you understand it even. So there's a lot involved. And people listen to this radio program and watch my TV programs. And my lore, you know, in this world is around. And people talk about, you know, how hard I am as a teacher. But I want to get into all of this. So let's get into the first question from Steve, who I do not know, who says he lives in California. Your practice, and then he puts in parentheses, TV radio, sounds very difficult. I would like my practice to be something I go towards when I need it. And then when I don't need it, I don't want to practice it. Your practice, and this is a long, long letter, I'm kind of pulling things out. Your practice seems impractical for today's world. Is it, Steve? Yes, Steve, I think depending on who you are and the level of your sincerity, which all spiritual practices are based on, your mental acuity, your spiritual acuity, your desires, your ambition, your pride, your vanity, everything is on the chopping block when you enter into an authentic spiritual practice. Now, when a person enters into a what I call a more trivial practice where they're only doing, saying, thinking, practicing, whatever, when they need it, as you put it, or when they feel like it, is not, well, it's not the kind of practice I offer. You must understand, the practice I give you is not only ancient and not only effective, but it's a lifestyle. I don't know what your lifestyle is. I don't know what you put forward as being very important. So I can't really say, you know, here's what would have to change if you entered into the practice I offer. But to be honest with you, it doesn't go over well with millennials. It doesn't go over real well with alcoholics. It doesn't go over well with people who have used drugs or food as a way to deal with their stresses and strains of not being able to deal with their lives, whatever. So there you are. And there's a great huge crowd out there that covers all of that. I've had alcoholics kind of hang in there recovered, or what they call recovered, and I've never, though they don't drink, they're still an alcoholic, and I have never been terribly, successful at really being able to help them advance in their spiritual practice. They advance in knowledge, but they don't advance in the practice. And as far as what they call the straight people, like me and others, it depends on your motivation. It depends on your willingness and the depth of your sincerity. How you define sincerity, how you utterly define that word, sincere, is very, very important. Now, if your sincerity is based in trying to change your life, to get a better life, to have a better life, you're going to miss the practice entirely, completely. You won't find the practice useful or a blessing at all, not at all. If you, on the other hand, are looking to move beyond the confines of your mind and your body, and the emotionality that your body possesses, and you are looking for the ultimate freedom of your life, transcendence, then you would be very interested in what I'm offering to you here. But again, most people don't do that. They're not into transformation. They're into trying to get whatever it is that they think will comfort them and make them feel good. You say your practice sounds difficult. I like mine where I get to do what I like, you said in this email, among many other things. Then you need to stay with that. You know, you're not sick of your sickness. In an authentic spiritual practice, Steve, you have to be sick of your sickness, as Lhotse said. And most people have tremendous endurance. You sound like a person who has tremendous endurance. I don't know how old you are, but I'm sure the testosterone is running rampant in you. And I'm sure you're looking at your life from the point of view of how your body sees your life, how you want to comfort your body, how you want to pleasure it, how you want it to feel better, whatever. Gain maybe all sorts of amenities for comfort and all of that stuff. And people use their practice, a lot of them, like a genie in a bottle. They just keep rubbing that bottle, thinking if they find the right teacher, the right philosophy, the right religion, whatever, that they're going to have a better life and this is all going to work out. And well, okay. I had this one student for many years, and he had what he thinks of as a good life, you know, eat, drink, and be merry kind of lifestyle is what he had. And So he, you know, he tried out to practice for a long time, just could not cut it because he couldn't give up his desire, his ambition, and his pride, which led to jealousy and all sorts of things that complicated him. And he would blow up any given situation he was ever in and turn it into a terrible mess. And he was, of course, more than willing to give up the practice because he'd have to give up all of that. And people like their drama, you know, they do. And when you get set in your ways and you're absolutely convinced that your mind can think this practice out, that your mind is the lever that you flip, and all of a sudden everything makes sense to you, you're in the wrong place. A spiritual practice makes no sense whatsoever. I was listening, Steve, years and years and years ago to NPR, and they were trying to, they had on some guests that ran an ashram back east, and they were trying to convince the audience there are benefits for meditation and doing meditation. There are no benefits to meditation. None. I meditated for years. Believe me, there are no benefits that Greg Penn's ego would adopt and say, that made my life better. I'm sitting here with you right now on the radio at 2:23 a.m. in the morning after my meditation practice at 1 o'clock to get ready for this radio program and my day. I don't think many people would look at that and go, boy, that really benefited me. If you're looking for money and prestige and looking for an easier life and getting away from the genetic emotionality that you possess and changing the way you think and all of that to make it more comfortable, forget it. That's not what the practice is all about. Your mental, emotional pain and sorrow will always be there, but how you deal with it, how you allow it to deal with you, will be totally different. Will that improve your life? That's up to you. That's up to you. I don't know what that will do for your life. I don't know you, Steve, but I can tell you, generally speaking, you go into the practice because you see the futility of not. You see the reason for not going into one and being authentic in it. And if you don't see that, then you think you have choices and that you're making these grand choices and you have the will to change this. You have nothing. We generally, as a populace, are subject to the whims of our genetic dispositions through our body, and that's it. It goes no further, and we just like to fool ourselves into believing that we're in control here, and we're not. Steve, I got to go, but yours was a great email, and I want to thank you. Please forgive me. Namaste. I love these questions. The next one comes from Kay in Los Angeles. She writes me often. How does a person really need a teacher such as you? You sound very difficult and hard, Kay. Kay, I oppose your genetic disposition. That's what, you know, I do. It isn't that I'm so difficult. It's just that I oppose what you enjoy and what you feel like is your lifestyle or your life. I had one student who, very honest, she's been with me for years. And has she made any progress? Nah, not really. And does she cause havoc in her life? Oh, yeah, all the time. And she's a very, very difficult person. Very difficult. So she said to me recently, I don't listen to your commentaries and I don't read your stuff. I don't get your discourses, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, why? And she said, because what you have to say gets in the way of the way I like to live my life. And so is that my fault? No, not really. And a teacher such as myself is rare. I'm not going to placate you. I'm there to help you. I'm not a mean son of a bitch like people want to paint me out because I just say to you, no, that's not the way. You got to try it this way. You got to do this. You got to do that. I have gestalts that I do at retreats. They're very, well, poignant. They're very pointed. They can be painful if your ego is out there. And a lot of people have tremendous egos. So if your ego is frail, which most egos are, and you get hurt easily by your ego, not me, by your ego, then yeah, I'm going to appear to be very difficult. But if you really knew me, if you knew how much I cared about you, if you knew that I wasn't doing this or saying what I need to say either, you know, to you at a retreat or whatever, wasn't meant to hurt you, was meant to help you because I'm very sincere about all of this. I have to work on it in my own life the same way, which I do. Then you would see it was out of compassion. There is an old Zen story, Kay, about the arrogant young man who came to the old Zen master and wanted to follow the way and become his student. And the master smiled at him after he made some comment that was rather foolish. And the master slapped him right in the face. You know, we test people. We want to see. I don't slap people, but in Zen, we test people. We see what kind of ilk they are, what kind of metal they have inside, and do they have any at all? Well, this student got very annoyed and angry and walked out, huffed out, and the chief disciple was standing there, and he said, he hit me. Your master is violent, he's crazy, blah, 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 blah. The chief disciple said, he was trying to help you. He was trying to show you how ludicrous your words were, your thoughts are. He's an old man. Imagine how his hand hurt to hit you. The young man understood, went back, and was more humble, and became a very good student, as the story goes. So there you are. I don't think you're that of that ilk, Kay. You sound, and you always have when we email back and forth, you sound like a person who needs a lot of reassurance. And now I'm really going to get blunt. And this is just true. You have your biology to deal with. And the biology that you suffer from is in your genetics and in your gender. It is in your nationality. You have to look at the whole shamata here. What am I? What am I comprised of? What makes my practice difficult? What makes it difficult for me to listen to things about myself that I either don't believe exist, don't want to think exist, or don't exist, or insult the heck out of me? What do I do with all of that? And if you're an insincere person, a person who is just looking for knowledge and the things that do not confront the part of you that is resisting the authentic spiritual practice, if you only want to listen to those things that make you feel happy and perky and think that you're on a path that you're really not on, then you definitely have come to the wrong teacher. So the object of the game here is your sincerity, not mine. Jesus once said, "Blessed is he who is not insulted in me." And he was right. You know, Jesus was an extremely insulting teacher. He taught a lot of things that people didn't want to hear, people didn't want to believe in, people didn't want to think was true. I mean, you go and you look at his teachings, most Christians that I have met, in fact, every Christian I've ever met, doesn't understand the Beatitudes. They don't understand what they mean. Do they care? No. They'll take the opinion of their pastor and they won't search it out on their own. And those teachings are the most revolutionary teachings the world has ever, ever heard. And they won't listen to them. They don't understand them. They don't want to understand them. It is all, to their ears, hieroglyphics. So I'm only as insulting as your insincerity reigns inside you. And that insincerity comes with wanting a better life for your practice. I got to get something for this. There's got to be a pony in there somewhere. I hear this all the time. What's the payoff? What do you get for it? And when your mind is used to that, then there is no way I can sound helpful to you at all. So that's why, Kay. That's why you and I have never met. And probably best that we don't. Please forgive me. Namaste. The last question is anonymous. This person said, don't use my name or anything. He just writes an email about his synopsis of my work. And he said, as a teacher, what is your goal? I don't have a goal. I don't sit here and think of goals that I want to achieve. I'm not a Tony Robbins kind of guy. So I don't do that. What I do is I offer to those who have ears to hear and eyes to see. I offer whatever it is that is the quote-unquote hidden code for those who have a deep and profound pull towards love. And those people can hear me. And they understand what I'm doing. They are my sponsors. They are people who understand the bigger picture of their own life experiences. They are people who are my most sincere students. It is them, and they understand the hidden language that is contained in almost everything I do. In fact, everything I do. For those who are looking for a way out, an escape, I'm not your kind of guy. And you need to go do other things, other teachers. They're really not teachers. They're facilitators of their own philosophy. You need to go do that until you realize somewhere down the lifetime scale of the whole thing that you've been duped, and you've duped yourself. It isn't the person before you. You've duped yourself. If there was anything that I would be after, let's say in a practice, it would be that I would like to break the chain of birth and death. And to me, that is the most noble thing a person can do, not to have to return to a place like this, not because it's evil or bad or all that, but because I'm sick of my own sickness. And when I'm sick of my own sickness, then I don't gravitate towards people, objects, and things that sustain my mental illness, my emotional illness. I am willing to take whatever happens and formulate a new lifestyle and live in a different way. How many people are willing to do that? Not many, and it's getting smaller and smaller as the days go on, as Washington goes on, as politics goes on, as everything goes on, it just gets smaller and smaller. And it's really sad, but that's the way it is. And, you know, we are basically our own worst enemy, as you probably know. So that's what my goal is, if there was a goal, to break that chain of births and death. But I don't sit here and give you or teach goals of things you should do in order to get a better life, or what you think of as a better life that probably wouldn't be any different than the one you have right now. Just added a few more bells and whistles, and that's the end of it. I teach three things, Mr. Anonymous. Simplicity, solitude, and silence. Those are the three main characters of my teachings. I'm out of here. Thank you for your interesting question, and forgive me, please. Namaste. Well, there you are, another weekend done. I hope this helped you. Have a beautiful, beautiful weekend. I'll be back on the air next week. Again, please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.